Hey, this is Chris, and for this latest episode of TC Talks, I'm actually sharing the first episode of another podcast that I'm involved with. And this podcast is called All Consumed. It's about food, drink, and travel, and it's co-hosted by my good friend and fellow food, drink, and travel writer, Neil Davey. This episode is about coffee and features three main interview sections as well as lots of witty banter between Neil and me. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks a lot. Hey, this is Chris Osborne. I am here with my good friend Neil Davey.
Hello.
And we are recording at a cafe in Soho called Sacred Cafe.
Just to prove it. Cafe-ing happening now, live.
And we're here because, well, we like to talk about coffee, like to drink coffee, and this is the first episode of our new podcast.
Yay!
Yay!
More coffee. And anyway, the podcast is called, Neil, you want to?
Absolutely. It's called All Consumed, which is, yeah, we thought it was a good name for this, and B, probably our philosophy for life.
Yes. What we are and what we do. And between us, we probably have consumed most of all things.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and with a list of things still to consume.
Yes,
probably.
And one of those things is coffee.
Absolutely.
And a few months ago, we were sitting here in Sacred.
Pretty much in exactly the same spot.
Yes. Yeah. This is my office away from my office, away from whatever. And had the idea to do a podcast because we like the sound of our own voices.
Absolutely.
And who can blame us? And trying to figure out what to talk about over coffee, so we thought, well, why don't we talk about coffee?
Indeed. I can't start my day without one, so we figured, yeah, we can't really start this without one.
I'm really there. So we are talking about coffee, and we've got three segments for this episode about coffee. We're going to start out with my interview with Marco Arrigo. He is the head of quality for Ely Coffee, one of the major players out of Italy, and definitely in London. You see him everywhere. And he is also one of the co-owners of Bar Termini, which maybe is more famous for its cocktails. It just won.
Yeah, I think it's one of the top 10
bars in the world, and they're just down the street. But they also do a fantastic coffee, and a lot of that is Marco's philosophy. And he's got very strong opinions, and whether you agree with him or not, if you love coffee.
And he can talk.
Yes. So it's a long one. It's a long piece, but you're going to love it, especially if you're into coffee. And then from there, we're going to meet up with some people that Neil joined, that Neil caught up with, and I sort of chimed in with them, and we've got Marco. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a cafe called Bocchi in Covent Garden. So we've got Boris and Kim, and it's Matthias, I believe.
Yes.
Again, little coffee and cocktail piece, and then those of you who've seen the face of me or know me will be slightly confused to hear I have a favourite barbers or a favourite hairdressers in Soho, a place called Blades. I popped in there to speak to one of their owners, Drew Olofsson, as well as being, I'm assured, a very good hairdresser. I really wouldn't know. You have direct, well, not direct experience, but Kenny.
I've had a contributor for my blog, Tiki Chris, go down there and get a haircut, and she was most pleased to do that. I went with you for the coffee and the secret bar
downstairs. Drew's quite a character, as you'll hear in due course.
Yeah.
But first, yeah, I guess. Let's bring in Marco.
All right. Enjoy.
Hey, this is Chris Osborne, and I'm here interviewing one of my coffee heroes, and that's Marco Arrigo. And I'm going to let him tell you who he is and what he does very briefly.
Thank you, Chris. Hello. I was 25 years ago, I was driving around London in a Fiat Panda selling Ely out the boot. When coffee was £3 a kilo, we started selling coffee at £13 a kilo. And, you know, my biggest problem was the name. Ely was people didn't think that was a very good name for a coffee company. You know, that was actually the biggest problem we had when we started. But the quality was so good, we were able to start that. thought I'd give that 20 years, see how that goes, and did that. And 3 years ago, opened Bar Termini in Soho to do what I think we should be doing with coffee. I feel that I didn't fit into either end of the coffee scale. The big cup and the syrups didn't suit me, and the small speciality changing coffees didn't suit me. I was into consistency, and I was into different things. I was into taking quality and compressing it, not taking average quality and diluting it. And that I was interested in a completely different thing to both ends of the market. So you've got to just open your own place, you know. And that's where I find myself. It's still doing 3 days a week with Ilya at the University of Coffee, where we're training 150 baristas a week. You know, so a very, very busy facility. And then the weekends, I'm at Bar Termini, where we're delivering the best coffee, using everything that we've learned from the school. I mean, everything at Bar Termini has really come from the school, you know. You know, everything on the menu is something, some problem we had or some solution we had. And it was just a great place to be able to actually let people taste where we think coffee should go, where we think it's going. And I think that this is where the market's going. Coffee bars will become bars, will become cocktail bars to pay the rents that are just so extortionate in London.
Okay. Very cool.
That was a very long intro, wasn't it?
Okay. All right.
I come from this area, and I started off with a frustrated approach where I got in a lot of trouble because I was sort of slagging things off, it sounded like. Mm-hmm. And then over time, I've balanced out. So I think it's a very interesting conversation. You know, what is speciality coffee? What is an Italian brand? There's nothing to get upset about. I think it's quite ignorant when you see them slagging each other off.
Okay.
Because what I see is when speciality slag off Italian coffee, well, come on, respect, that's where it came from. Right. Let's have some respect here, you know. Italian coffee is about making a blend. A blend that is consistent from January to December, all year round. We're buying the same beans as speciality. Those beans that popped up in Kenya in May, we still bought them, but we put them in the blend to replace a flavour that we lost from Guatemala the month before. So we mix the beans to keep the coffee consistent. That's much harder than this experimental approach of just tasting. This is from Kenya, taste it. Good or bad.
Right.
You've only got 3 kilos, so you better roast it right first time. You know, different coffees from different parts of the world need different roasting. It's like me giving you a mystery meat. You kind of don't know how to cook it. Is it going to be beef? Is it going to be lamby? Is it a long, slow cook? Is it hard fire? Is it a good quality fillet where you give it high, hard fire? Or is it a stringy, tough bit of meat that you've got to cook long? You don't know.
Right.
So you roast your first batch and you taste it. You often don't have enough to get it right in time to sell it. You probably use half of it before you get to making it. So you have this whole thing about dialing it in and like, we don't have that. We made a beautifully balanced blend, and if I stop it here, stop it here, stop here, it's balanced at any point I stop it, because it's blended correctly. It's a triangulation of acid, sweet, bitter, perfectly balanced.
Right.
It shouldn't be more of any. And I'm seeing here this like, our coffee's fruity. Well, that, I would be unhappy with that. That would be a defect.
Right.
It's not balanced, obviously. If you tell me it's fruity or sour, because the first 10 seconds of coffee is the sugars. The second 10 seconds is the citric acid, is the acidic part. And the last 10 seconds is the chlorogenic acid, the bitterness. And so you have these three steps. If you pull your coffee out with the sweet and the acid, you get sour. And that's what's happening, this fruity. And it's like I'm at a wine tasting, Chris, and everyone's going, try my wine, it's really corky.
Right.
And I'm going, shit, when did this become an attribute? what do you mean corky? Oh yeah, I put extra corks in to make mine extra corky. And I feel like I'm in this mad world of people weighing and it upset me at the beginning, so I talked quite violently about
yes,
it.
Yes, okay.
And having gone round and spoke, they're nice people. They're not wanker. You know,
right.
You come across the old one, but be honest, they're quite nice people. When I speak to them, they go, oh, and they get it, but no one's told them. So I'm enjoying that at the moment.
Okay.
I'm going around popping bubbles, which is fun, you know?
Well, do you find people coming in to, say, Bar Termini or students here expecting to be able to do these, expecting having a certain palate, and your you have to come up against that? Yeah, what are the expectations for coffee drinkers and baristas these days?
Well, what's interesting, I think the really wonderful thing that puts that to bed is that if you go to a roaster and they serve you in a leather apron and he's got his bicycle nailed on the wall and the sugar is in an empty Spam container and he's playing the game, you accept it and you think, he must know what he's doing. I mean, this, he took 15 bloody minutes to make it. He must know what he's doing. He must be some sort of expert. But you take that same brand and you put it into a restaurant like St. John's. And remember, St. John's, there was a family connection with Caravan. Well, Caravan's very acidic, very fruity. In Caravan, they love it. You take it out and you put it in a good restaurant like St. John's, the customers were spitting it on the floor because it's just acidic coffee. Sure. It tastes wrong. And then you serve it in the wrong place, it doesn't work. So Caravan have now dropped it, even though they're family and they're using another Italian roast. And as you know, St. John's, so you know, Trevor Gulliver and Fergus Henderson. So I think that sort of says it all in a way.
Okay.
You know? And I think quality will always be there. You know, we've been 20 years ago, we were talking about zero defects, and we're still the only coffee out there with zero defects. So the quality, and I'm still here because the quality's still here. If anybody gets 20 years, I've been saying the same thing. You give me a coffee better than Illy, I'll work for them tomorrow.
Well, how do you get to zero defects? Is that sourcing? Is that leaving out all the bad beans?
Okay. That's you purchasing. Okay. Everyone purchases from the same. 95% of the world's coffee isn't fantastic.
Yeah.
It's not really what we're looking at. We're looking at the world's 5 to 3% of coffee. Sure. We buy that. But it's like buying millions of peanuts. You've got to have the technology to pick out the bad ones. And that's what Illy did 25 years ago. And 25 years ago, we were talking about it and people didn't get it then. Now they get it. Because what speciality coffee, you know, the grading for coffee.
Sure.
American coffee is up to 70 defects a kilo. Italian blended coffee is up to 30 defects a kilo. Speciality coffee is 15 defects per kilo. Illy is zero.
Right.
Now, this is a factual buying chart. This is the ICR data.
Okay.
I talk facts and figures. Because you can give me all your opinion, but I can give you back figures.
Right.
You can't argue with statistics. They are what they are. From day one, all press was balanced. You know, from day one, some of those coffees were spot on.
Right.
You know, and but people like, if you look at people like Nude, they started off very acidic when they started, but over the years, they've really balanced it out. They're getting better at it.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? This kind of attitude of letting baristas roast coffee is wrong. Mm. It's a different art. It's like, you may be good at rugby, I'm good at football. They look similar, they look very different, you know? Your expertise are yours and mine are mine, and you don't do both. It's like letting the waitresses cook, you know? That's what they're doing. They're letting the waitresses cook. What do you think would happen, you know? When Starbucks came and made the cup bigger, how do you think that would, if you had a restaurant and I doubled the size of your plates, what would that do to the quality of your food? So it's like, that was the old argument. The new argument is, yes, everything's got smaller and better quality. But I think it's just understanding each other. You know, I see in speciality coffee often, they'll take a dark roast coffee and break all the rules of coffee. A dark roast is for a small espresso. The bigger the cup, the lighter the roast, the larger the grind. The smaller the coffee, the darker the roast, the finer the grind. So dark coffee is ground like flour, and a lighter roast is ground like sugar. You know?
Okay.
These are rules. You can't play with these rules. These are rules of physics and chemistry. You can't change. So what I'm seeing, sometimes you read an article where someone's taken a dark roast, small ground coffee, put it in a Chemex and says it's shit. Oh, Italian coffee's shit.
Right.
No, you idiot. You've used it. It's like you've taken the fillet steak and boiled it.
Right.
And then you say it's shit. Well, who looks an idiot, me or you? You know, when I read that. But not, there's a lack of education for people to go, ah, and that's where we are with the industry. So
what would basic education be then for someone, I don't know, on their coffee break, someone who wants to go out, what should they be looking for to get a quality cup?
I think consistency is missing, and balance.
Okay.
I mean, these are the two fundamental things. And that's, you know, with food, they are the most important things. They should be with coffee as well.
Okay.
You know. And it's so funny to see how some places play around with portion size. They, you know, we have the Mexican burrito place up here when it first came, Chilango, with big portions. Da, da, da. Then it got busy and they started reducing and then they lost all their customers and then they had to build it back up. And it's because they kept playing with their portion sizes.
So you never knew what you were getting.
So you never knew what you were going to get. Sometimes they put on 2 spoons of meat. Sometimes they put on half. And it pisses people off.
Right.
People actually like consistency. Why do you think we have more chains in England than any other? We've got more chains in England than you do in America. You've still got lots of independents in America. In England, we've killed them all. And why is that? Because the English are safe. They like to know what they're going to get, know what it's going to cost, know how long it'll take. They like to know in advance. And that's why we have chains in this country, because people like to know. As time goes on, we can wean ourselves back to the independence, because we have to go through that to get there. And I think you can do all the parallels with the food you like. You know, I think it makes sense to us anyway, I think. I don't know how the public, I'm always asking. Illy, I think, have been not very good at marketing themselves. I mean, I start with one-liners that people just go, whoa. And I go, look, how dare you? You're talking to a company that for 90 years we've been making one coffee. How dare you?
Right.
You know, and then they'll attack you ethically, and you go, well, hold on a minute. This is the fifth year running. We're in the top 100 most ethical companies in the world.
Okay.
And there's one-liners that just put the thing to bed, but we don't use them. Ilya.
Well, you want to give sort of like the whistle stop history tour of Illy?
No, I'm just saying this is where I see
family us. Company, right? Still family owned.
This is where we are. We were the only sustainable coffee company for about 5 years.
Right.
You know, and they've got a wonderful story. I think we should talk about our heritage more, but in a way, I think the Italians don't think that's cool. I think that. You know, I think in this market we need them. For example, there's a big thing in the moment about coffee. It's fresh coffee. Coffee's got to be fresh. It shouldn't. You can't drink it within 5 days of roasting.
Right.
5 to 8 days, it needs to rest. It needs to degas. 85% of its CO2 needs to come out. Otherwise, it's fizzy almost, you know. And we look at it, all right, you may like roast pork. I like prosciutto San Daniele. Right. It's a longer process. It's not old ham. People don't look at Parma ham and go, it's old ham. No, it's a prestigious thing. It's pregiato, you know. That 21 days of seasoning makes it better. Yes. And in a way, you can't do it with any other coffee, because if there was one bad bean in that blend, the whole thing. And the reason we're zero defects is because the pressurized packaging it amplifies the coffee. So if you put anything bad in, that's amplified too.
Mm-hmm.
So you mustn't put anything bad. You make rum toff, you put fruit in rum. You put one cherry in with a bruise, the whole thing ferments.
Sure.
Things off. I make an omelette for you with 1,000 eggs. One egg is off. What do you taste? You taste that one.
Sure.
It's all you taste. And so this is the very pragmatic approach to it, but it makes people understand. So I'm into banging that drum. I like to talk about those things, and people go, I didn't know that about it. We paid a farmer 25% more than fair trade.
Okay.
More than fair trade, you know? And we don't talk about it.
Right.
So I've lost probably £300,000-£400,000 of business a year because we're not fair trade. But people don't even want to talk to you.
Right, they want the label.
They just want the badge.
Yeah.
Fair trade begged Illy to have the fair trade brand. They gave it to us for nothing. We told them, because fair trade wanted to get into Italy, and they wanted to use Illy as a vehicle, because the big here was not very big in Italy at all. And fair trade said to Illy, you only have to put one bean in every can and you can have the badge. And Illy didn't done well enough. Illy, which, you know, to their credit, I like that they're doing their own thing, you know. So I can't avoid Illy. Even when I do my master classes at Termini, it's what comes out of me comes out of me. Sometimes I'm also justifying the coffee we use at Termini, because some people seem quite surprised we're using Illy at Termini. Okay. So I do have to cover a bit of it, you know. And I just do those little one lines, like, you know, what is artisan coffee? If a company's been making one coffee for 90 years, you can't get much more artisan or speciality than that, sorry, you know.
Right.
And there's lots of things we can measure in coffee for its quality. I mean, you know, we can measure the caffeine content. There's measurable things that dictate the quality, like there is with every product, with metals, with food, with anything, you know.
Right.
You can have cheap cheese, you can have expensive cheese. It's visible and it's measurable. So it's not this opinionated thing about coffee. Oh, I like Kimbo. Oh, I like Segafredo. No, you can look at the defects, you can look at the beans used, you know the price of them. You know, you can measure, you know, but people just think it's a it's an opinion. It's not an opinion, you know. If your coffee's 11% caffeine, it's not high quality. Right. If my coffee's 1%, it's the highest quality you can get. It's hard to get down to that sort of. Every right. bad bean is high in caffeine, basically. So
because
as you pick them out,
the more caffeine, the more bitter, or how does that work?
No. The bean itself, mm-hmm. when the bean is growing, yeah. when it's underripe, it's high in caffeine, almost 18%.
Okay.
When it's perfectly ripe, that week that it's perfectly ripe, it goes down to 1%. And then when it over-ripens, it goes back to almost 20% okay. caffeine. So when I take a batch of coffee and I say to you it's 3% caffeine, it gives you an idea how many underripe and overripe have fallen into the blend.
Okay.
That's all. So when we buy our beans, selected beans, the highest quality we can buy, and then we reselect them again mm-hmm. at the factory, and we just keep doing that until it's zero defects, it goes down to 1%. Because I'm telling you, all the beans are perfect.
Right.
It's you know, you can't just copy this without doing it. You know, you right. can't just say, oh yeah, we do that.
Sure.
You know? So yeah, I mean, of course I bang Illy's drum. I mean, I don't have this. And what I'm doing at Termini is I'm sailing as close to the wind as you can
right.
without, you know, if we don't clean the machine this hour, the coffee's undrinkable. You know, it's literally on the edge all the time.
Okay.
I'm very lucky. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the coffee world. I'm the only barista out there that's been working with the one coffee for 25 years and the same machine for 25 years.
Right.
The most consistent coffee and the most consistent machine. Bang, bang, bang. So I see every fluctuation. I know exactly what everything mm-hmm. does. So when you look at specialty coffee, for example, right. you see the Chemex, the Hario, the Siphon, the AeroPress, you see all these things in a row. You've got no idea what they do. You've got no idea. Go to Caravan and ask for one of each. There's a different recipe for every one.
Right.
There's a different time. There's a different temperature and there's a different pressure. The four parameters of what the machine does. So you drink from the AeroPress and you get this coffee, and you drink from the Chemex and you get that coffee. So what do? I use the same recipe across all the equipment
right.
so you can see what the equipment does.
Sure.
So if I put 5 grams per 100 mil in the AeroPress, the you taste it, you know you've got the same strength throughout, and we've got the most consistent coffee.
Yeah.
Ah, that's what the AeroPress does. Oh, that's what the Chemex does. Oh, that's what the V60 does.
Okay.
Because you've got the same, you can compare, you know? So that's my angle on speciality.
Okay.
And that's what I teach here. And I sell consistency. Not everyone realizes they need consistency. They think it's romantic to be a bit disorganized about all that.
Right.
I love Monmouth coffee, but you don't get two bags the same.
Right.
You know, do you? You know, lovely woman, Anita, da da da. But the, you know, you're going to get that. It's like when you make caramel or butterscotch, like you're cooking it and cooking it, nothing happens,
right.
and then it burns.
Yeah.
You know, so French sit there with bits of paper dipping it in to see the colour constantly because it's that change. You know, the difference between light roasted coffee and dark roasted coffee is 2 degrees. It's a tiny difference. So you've
right.
got to catch it in a microsecond.
Okay.
So having a tea strainer on the end of a bamboo stick. Doesn't do that,
right.
you know. It's romantic, it's lovely, but it doesn't deliver consistency.
Right.
We can't work. I can't run Bar Termini if every bar of Campari I pick up is different. One's red, tomorrow
right.
it's blue, then it's green, then it's yellow. We can't work like that.
Right.
We need to have consistency. You know, we're very precise.
Okay.
And you know, what does a chef do? What's a chef's job? A chef's job is consistency. Today the onions are massive, no flavour. Tomorrow the onions are tiny and really strong. What do? Your signature dish has got to be the same. You compensate. Today you rein it in a bit,
right.
put a bit extra in. You have to be the palate that makes that signature dish consistent. Today the carrots are really sweet. In 4 months' time, they're dry as anything. You have to change a variety, maybe.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
you're
yes.
the head chef. Your job is to make that plate the same. And that's what a good Italian coffee brand does, is they keep that thing the same. So we lost an acidic bean from Guatemala that's out of harvest now. We can find something similar in India to
right.
replace that flavour. So Italians sound stupid when they slag off speciality. They haven't got the point of that. And speciality sounds stupid when they slag off Italian because they haven't got the point of that. They're
sure.
doing two different things. It's football, rugby. It's silly to say, ah, your ball's the wrong shape. You just look ignorant, you know.
It's a different sport. Yeah.
So I think I can sort of sit back and sort of look at it in the bigger picture.
Okay.
You know, both sides. I think since Germany I've learned a lot as well, you know, and I can see both sides. And I don't think, no one should be upset. I think everyone should sort of share a little bit more. I got told off by the lady at Milk Bar in Flat White. I said in some article in the bloody New Zealand Herald or something, I've even forgot I did it, you know. Right. And I said something about, you know, it was an article about Kiwis, and I said, yeah, the Kiwis that come over and did Flat White were cracking, but they sold it and buggered off back to New Zealand. I said, now, the coffee's not fantastic, they're using some Swedish thing that's really, really fruity. And the lady came around to Termini to complain, and I said to her, look, all I said was the coffee used to be better, and it did. It used to be square mile, it used to be beautifully balanced, and it used to be beautifully made. Now you're knocking out that acidic stuff. I says, I can't put it in my face, love. I mean, I don't offend you. That's what I said, and I'll own what I said.
Okay.
I don't, you know, I'm not going to carry away. I can't stand your coffee. It used to be good, it's not good now. And I think that she was quite upset about this. I said, look, I said, it's very simple. I'll happily come to you one evening. You get the staff, all your baristas in, and I'll forensically go through every movement and everything you do. You know, I'll criticise and you'll learn something. I'll make you think about what you're doing. I said, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why are you... She didn't want to know. I said, you know what? Any business would like that. If you have a polymer business, and I said, let me come and slag off all your processes, as a good managing director, you'll say, bring it on.
Right, yeah.
I want to learn something. Maybe you might pick up one thing. Maybe I'm just full of shit. But she didn't even want to know.
Right.
And I said, you know what? You're not that serious about your quality, because if you were, you'd get me in. Whether you like it or not, whether you hate me or not, whether you want to punch me in the face, you should be curious enough to hear what I've got to say, if you really cared about your quality.
Okay.
I said, and I bet you I could tell you five or six things that you might go, oh yeah, you're right. Oh yeah, why are we doing that? You know? But there's no interest. So I said, look, I can see why your coffee's got worse, because you've got no real interest in improving the quality. You just want to do what you want to do. You know? And she goes, well, we've got an award-winning coffee. I said, darling, your award is in latte art. It's got nothing to do with quality.
Right, yeah.
Drop Coffee's only award is a latte art award.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because I like my coffee black.
Hmm.
So the whole flat white thing, the whole latte art thing is just lost on me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the skill behind it and the craft, I guess. But
look, latte art is flaring. Okay? Yeah. You go to a cocktail bar and the guy's chucking bottles in the air. It's all about him.
Yeah.
Okay? Fuck you. It's about me. I'm the genius here, and that's what it is. Latte art by its nature is inconsistent. I don't like it. We don't do latte art. The customer does the latte art at Termini. I give you the jug. You bloody do it. I don't need to do it. I give you the jug, and the customer says, I want a flat white, and then we say, well, just put half the milk in then. We don't break their balls with 2 hours of explanation.
Right.
You know, we just do our latte, which is a triple shot, 21 gram shot of coffee. Give them a jug of milk. So if you want a latte, put it all in. If you want a flat white, put half of it in. And here's a little professional jug, so you can do your own latte art. And then Instagram it after.
Sure.
And we've just been doing that, you know. And I think we have a refreshing approach to all of it. We don't do paper cups. We don't do skim milk. We don't do decaf. You don't need it. We do a 10-gram espresso, a 20-gram espresso, the frothy one, the flat one. And that's it. You don't need these 2,400... The choice does not increase your business. It increases your wastage, it increases your storage space, it increases your fridge space, it increases your costs.
Right.
You know, I've seen restaurants, I've helped people with restaurants where they've had four types of mussel. They've got a New Zealand green mussel for this dish, and they've got a North Sea mussel for that dish, and they've got a Cornwall mussel for that dish. And, you know, what?
Right.
How are you making money? You know, unless you're selling it all the time, which I doubt.
Right.
How are you making money? Get one mussel and do it well. You know,
sure.
Do one dish. You know, have a mussel dish, have this dish, and that's kind of, I think, the philosophy for the future. Because as rents go up, you can't just keep charging more. You need to also become more efficient, and that's also becoming more ethical. And that means looking at everything you do. And ethical is intelligent. It's not you know, just being tight or anything. You must be. When I see a chef, I like people, someone I admire, Nigella. Okay. Jella is a real chef, because when she puts an egg yolk in, she puts the white in the freezer.
Right.
When she has a dinner party, she collects all the half red wines and she puts them in the freezer. But when she's cooking a soup, she's got some red wine for the stock. You know, a real chef is efficient. I sacked my chef at Termini, the first chef at Termini I had.
Okay.
He's called Andrea Zagatti, if you ever come across him.
Okay.
He's called Zagatti Gourmet Experience. He's a moron. We did an event. He bought 20 chickens from Whole Foods. He cut the breast off and he threw the carcasses and legs in the bin. And I looked on the order. He had 12 litres of chicken stock on the order. I sacked him on the spot.
Wow.
Yeah. You can't even make this shit up. I mean, I was just livid that I couldn't take these chickens home. That he threw them in the bin. Right. That's not a chef, Chris. That's not a chef. That's a personal chef. I reckon he's never worked in a kitchen. I think he's a personal chef to the Aga Khan or something, and he's done all this stupidness. In fact, all his receipts were Fortnum & Mason, Selfridges. You know what I mean? Like,
nice.
So you have to buy icing sugar in Fortnum & Mason, mate. You know?
Right, yeah.
So to me, he's not a chef. A chef doesn't do that. You know, even whatever level you cook at, it doesn't mean you buy your butter in Harvey Nichols. Right. You know what I mean? Buy your butter from a local farm. That makes you a chef.
Sure.
So I think we don't talk any madness at all. I just think we say things early. I mean, 15 years ago, I was slagging off skimmed milk and I was crucified for it. Now everyone agrees with me, you know?
Sure.
I just realise now I can be a little bit ahead of what's happening in the market, but you've got to start it going in that direction by saying it out loud.
Right.
And unfortunately, the corporate job, my hands are tied a little bit and I'm getting lots of trouble.
Right.
Now I can get in trouble twice. I can piss off two businesses, really.
Okay. So, do you find that two separate modes, being with your own bar and then being with Illy, or do you find it's pretty much the same thing either way? I mean, you want a good quality.
Exactly
product
the same.
At the
Listen,
end.
Okay. Tomorrow morning,
yeah.
I've got a school in Pentonville Prison on the back here.
All right.
3 months before release, you come on my barista class.
Mm-hmm.
You do my. I talk to them exactly the same as I talk to you, as I talk to a 3-star Michelin. Do it again. Are you happy with that? Would you serve that to your mother? Do it again. You know, you use the same phrases, the same jokes, the same words, and you talk to them the same way. It's exactly the same thing. You know, there's one way of doing it. This is how we do it. You know, people say to me, oh, can I come and do your level two or your level three? There is no level two. I'm telling you how to do it right first time. What's level two? You showed me how to cook a steak. Can I do level two?
Mm-hmm.
What's level two?
Right.
You know. So
the basics of being a barista are something you learn in a few hours?
Yeah, you can learn the basics. I mean, I think that if I had 8 hours with you,
yeah.
I'd like to have an hour a month for 8 months.
Okay.
Because I think it's really important that we spend some time together and you go back to work.
Sure.
Because I can't fix your bad habits.
Right.
Lots of people were told that to do a latte, you know, you see it with their hands, they start rising. Starbucks told everyone that to do a latte you have to lift as you're pouring like
right.
that. So I see all these weird things happening.
Right.
I can't stop you doing it. Chris, stop lifting your hand. Chris, I'll cut your fucking hand off in a minute. Because you've been doing it like that for 10 years. If you've been doing that for 10 years, it's hard to get you to stop.
Right.
You know? Like the Italians that used to do the old Parkinson's. Like that. And I keep saying, don't move, and put handcuffs on them and all sorts to get them, stop moving, you know, but that's how I do it. So yeah, I think it's important that you have gaps. I think it's important you go away and practice. And then next time I see you, maybe we've cured that. Mm. Now your elbow's sticking out. We're going to work on that, you know.
Okay.
And that's, I think it takes both sides, you know. It takes the hour of training, a tutor training. We don't do any history or anything in here. I mean, you can read a book. You come to spend an hour with me and we read a book together. This is an old, and this bloke is called, you know, had his goats eating berries. You know, I haven't even got a photograph of the bloke. There's a cartoon. How can it be real? You know? So I think it's about cutting it to the bone and doing the minimum amount. You know, the smallest thing you can do to have the biggest effect is what we always focus on. And fix you over time. If this was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Right.
You know, you can't come and see me and I'll give you a black belt. You've got work to do. It takes time. We have to go through all the belts in order for you to get better.
Did you start out as a barista?
No, I had no idea what I was doing.
Okay.
I went to, I started out, I was working for Alitalia at the time.
All right.
So I went to learn about coffee. I flew to Lygon Street in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Big scene going on there 20 years ago. One of the first places I saw. I went to work in Cafe Bella or something. real old fashioned, almost like American, like when you go to Rocco's in New York and all the tablecloth is red, white and green, and the serviettes are red, white and green, and Chianti bottles. It's kind of this weird snapshot of a bygone Italy that never actually existed.
More Italian than
Italy. Yeah. It's like, well, it's like going to Sri Lanka and they have tea at four and they're more British than England are.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They really embrace it. I know why, you know? And so it was this kind of phenomenon. And then I went to work and the latte art came out, and the Edward Schromer at Cafe Vivace in Seattle. I went to work for him for free for 1 week.
Okay.
And I realised, your coffee's terrible. It was so black and burnt and undrinkable, but made beautiful pictures because it was a wonderful dark canvas to write on with the white foam.
Right.
So the photography was beautiful. And so all around the world, everyone raved about this Cafe Vivace in Seattle. Coffee was terrible, but it looked good. And people never tasted it.
This was before Instagram.
This was, this is, I'm talking 25 years ago.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, the guy was a pioneer. In a way, he invented latte art. Great, but there's other things. So when I came back, I put chocolate in the coffee on top of the coffee to do the latte art, to darken the top, to make a nice white, to make the good contrast, you know. So it's all, you know, I went out and learned from where I thought was the best places, and what we've ended up here, we haven't listened to, we don't do what they do in Italy, because I think in a way we're well ahead of Italy. Our market's so far ahead of Italy.
Okay.
The things we dealt with 5 years ago, Italy are just dealing with now. So I can't use much of the stuff that we get from Italy, because here, what we've done is we've taken the best from every world. There's things I like about the Italians, there's things I like about the Americans, there's things I like about the Australians, and I've stolen the best things, there's things I like about speciality. And that's, it's very opinionated maybe, but this is my opinion of what we need to be doing here for our business. And I think it's better than any of the others put together, because there's always things I like and things I don't like, you know?
Okay.
And I think at the end of the day, it's like, I think if you want to learn any subject, go and see 10 good people. If you want to learn about coffee, you won't learn it all from me. Come and see me and 9 other good people, and you make up your own mind, and that makes you better. Each one of us are opinionated because of the work we do and what we need from it, you know? So maybe somebody else, who maybe go see a good guy that works at, go and see Gwilym Davis at Proof Rock, and go and see James Hoffman, and then decide who's right, who's wrong, what makes sense, what doesn't. And I think that makes you better.
Okay.
It's arrogant to think that anyone can teach you. All I can do is inspire you to look, you know, to be interested and motivate you to go out and find more. But don't listen to anybody, you know.
And how would you rate the coffee scene in London at the moment, this year, and what you see happening?
And I think the problem is with the coffee scene in London, unfortunately, the direction is going, you can't, I don't think we can financially afford to stay as a coffee scene in London. I think it has to go towards bar, unless you start selling some cocktails, which is not easy to do.
Okay.
The people that have started to sell cocktails, baristas making vodka espressos, they're terrible, you know, absolutely shocking. Again, it's taking it too lightly, not really having respect for what they're doing. A mixologist can become a barista, but a barista cannot become a mixologist overnight. It's a very different thing. You know, a mixologist has to learn 1,000 ingredients. A barista has to learn 4. Milk, water, chocolate, coffee.
Right.
A mixologist can learn 10,000 ingredients. There's no limit.
You hire somebody for Termini.
We're all mixologists.
They're all, okay, so they're all coming from a bar background.
All bar background. Okay. I've got a school. I can teach you to do coffee.
Okay.
I don't need someone to come and go, oh, I can, if I employed somebody to do swans on coffees and then he goes, I've got to find someone else who can do a bloody swan. And I can't teach you that quick. That takes months and months and months. So you put your business in a very weak position by setting a standard that you can't achieve and you can't train your staff. It's all about delivery.
Okay.
All about delivery. You can deliver it or you can't deliver it, you know? So you design it out of your business. All those pros, all those cons, design them out.
Okay.
You know?
Well, back to London. You got anything on the horizon you wanna mention, or just things happening?
I'm doing a cold brew project. I kind of disagree with the way you make cold brew. I don't know why people do it that way. It's extraordinarily time it shows a lack of understanding about the behaviour of the coffee. The thing about the coffee bean is the longer it's in contact with the water, the more bitter and the more rubbish comes out of it. Okay. You leave a bean in contact with water, all the caffeine comes out, all the minerals and the salts and all the nasty flavours come out. So why is espresso the height of coffee? Because it has a very short contact time with the water, and then you cut it before all the rubbish comes out. It's like if you make a fish stock. You don't leave it boiling for 17 hours.
Right.
It tastes like shit. It will be so bitter and overdone. There's a 20 minutes, pull it off. It doesn't get any better. That's it. You know, you've taken the nicest bit, the sweet beginning, blah, 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 and then you stop it before it starts getting bitter. And, blah, blah, blah. And this is the same with coffee. But this whole thing is like pulled pork. There was a guy at a show, had 100 hours pulled pork. It was dry as anything, normal.
Yeah, right,
But this was it. This is only 40
if it's
hours.
Good after his is 100. Hours, yeah, it must be better. Exactly. Great after 100. Yeah,
exactly. It's about doing it right, you know. Okay. And so I think that, you know, the it's the understanding of it. So I'm doing a cold brew project at the moment, making some cold brew and putting some teas through the same process. Like I'm making really beautiful pure rooibos tea.
I love rooibos.
So I like to do cold brew. Rooibos, cold brew green tea, cold brew chamomile tea, and then use all the coffee technology to filter, like a double Chemex filter, and makes it such a beautiful colour. So we're kind of looking at this, making these really beautiful, pure, delicate, non-alcoholic things, that like a tea, but just really adult. You know, everything out there is just full of sugar, and you can go and buy a green tea, something in Pret or whatever, and it's just full of sugar and full of crap and full of preservatives. I just want to take the highest quality green tea, because the one thing we know about high quality tea is you can use it 17 times if it's high quality tea. So why don't we make lots and lots of cold brew with it? You know, where we put tea in cold water, never gets any heat. Everyone makes iced tea wrong. They put it in hot water, ice, put it in the fridge.
Right.
The heat makes a difference, makes the oils come out, makes it cloudy. If you just put tea into water for 12 hours, 1 gram per 100 mil, you get the most beautiful colour. No heat, no oil, just beautiful flavour. And then I double filter it, give it a rough, cheap coffee filter paper, and then finish with a Chemex. So I'm kind of into that. So yeah, I'm at this weird sort of crossroad at the moment. I mean, 20 years with Illy, and then a couple of years, great success of Terminal, won everything you could win, you know, at the time. And it's been really, really great. But it's my perfect lifestyle now. It's, you know, 3 days of this, 4 days of that. It's a lovely balanced life, you know.
You wouldn't want to give one up for the other?
No, I like the two together. Okay. I like, you know, it works well. One's casual, one's more formal.
Okay.
And the mixture of the two, one pays the rent and the other one's a hobby. You know, the other one is for fun, really. But I get
ideas from both going into the other.
Yeah. Two together work. You know, I get lots of opportunities in Illy because of Termini and the other way around. So I've kind of found a really nice place to be, and I'm enjoying it, you know. I've got more time. It's so much nicer, you know.
Fantastic. You good with that?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So that was Chris catching up with Marco from Bar Termini and Illy Coffee, or Marco talking while Chris listened. But hugely enthusiastic.
And knowledgeable. Whether you disagree with them or not, you better be able to back up your facts if you want to argue with them.
I wouldn't even begin to try. So next up, we've got it's another piece with the founders of a cafe in Covent Garden on Earlham Street, to be precise, called Bocky. We think it's Bocky, could be Bocky.
I think Bocky.
Yeah, I think Bocky. Yes, Bocky. I suppose Boris. It's named after the founders.
Okay.
So it's Boris and Kim. So I guess it's the of Boris and the
King.
Boris? I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, fantastic little spot.
B-O-K-I.
B-O-K-I. Earlham Street, as we say. Opens all day. Really nice. These guys will... They touch on their history in the piece. We won't talk too much about that now. But they open through the day, and by the evening kind of roll into very nice little kind of coffee wine bar set up, lots of small plates, and a very impressive program of coffee based cocktails, which they're going to tell us about now.
Excellent.
Well, fantastic. I mean, okay. So we're here with the, well, I guess, team Boki or Team Boki?
Whatever you like.
Whatever you want to say. Yeah. So it's Boris, yes. Who's the, as you said earlier, the BO.
The BO, yeah.
Is that what you said?
And,
yeah.
And Kim, who's the key.
The key to business, yeah.
Also, Johnny's is...
Matthias.
Who's the drinks...
Drink Smith.
Smith, fantastic. That's a good term. So, actually, I mean, we're here really to talk coffee. I mean, and you guys have a fantastic cup of coffee. You're doing amazing drink things with the coffee. And so it's all press coffee you're using? Why all press? What was it about that?
The long story is, I spent a year living in Sydney about probably almost 10 years ago now. Yep. And I went over to Australia wanting to get further into the coffee industry. I went over saying, with a CV saying I was a barista, and I went into a bunch of coffee shops in Australia, and first off they said, okay, make us a coffee. And then within 10 seconds they were like, get the F away from the coffee machine. So I finally got a job.
Step away.
In a really good coffee shop in Paddington in Sydney. Mm. Just because they liked me for some reason. And
I don't know why that would be.
They used all press coffee. So they sent me for the barista training there, which was really good, really top notch. Opened my mind to things I had no idea about. I've been making coffee for about 10 years in the UK before that, and I had no idea what I was doing, I learned. So I did multiple trainings with Allpress, and then 4 months down the line, they let me make coffee when the barista went on break, and then a year down the line, they actually let me make coffee for customers. And I just really loved Allpress coffee to start with. Their culture, their staff, their training was just all really open and friendly and professional and thorough. And then when I moved back to the UK a few years later, when me and Boris were looking to open our first shop, we did very thorough tasting of all the roasters in London at the time, which was around 2013, 2014, so there's nowhere near as many as there are now. And thankfully, Allpress had just moved to the UK that year, I think, or maybe the year previously. So to do our due diligence, we tried all the coffee in London, which sometimes was fun, sometimes was really bad. We had a very bad experience at the London Coffee Festival, where we literally tried every coffee in the row.
Fantastic, and slept in about what, November?
That changed my coffee later. Drinking forever. Up to then I would drink coffee whenever I wanted to. Mm-hmm. From then on I have set times a day with a single shot.
It was a life changer.
Well, why a cafe anyway? I mean,
It was something...
As opposed to anything, tapas bar or anything.
Topless bar.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I didn't think you said topless, not tapas.
Tapas.
My nurse probably said more about me than anything.
Well, you could have some of that in here. It's a good long space.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we'll think about that one.
We had options.
We had options. Essentially, it was because we both always enjoyed coffee. I think we met working in the film industry about 12 years ago around the communal coffee machine, and we always enjoyed making coffee and hanging out, smoking cigarettes, talking nonsense about Chuck Norris movies and stuff like that. And since my time in Australia, that ignited a real passion in me for coffee. Mm-hmm. And I saw not to say there's a gap in the market, but I saw the possibilities of what coffee could do in London. And Boris was up for coming along for the ride.
Okay.
And essentially we thought it would be an easier way to make money than the work we've been doing in the film industry. Could not have been more wrong.
What are the challenges? What's made it so tough?
Just everything. There's just so many more things you have to think about running your own business, right? Mm. Rather than just working in someone else's business, selling products. There's, you know, everything's amazing on paper until you start involving people and councils and bills, basically. but it's a lot more fun. Okay. And we always wanted to be... We're both very independent, and I think we always wanted to work for ourselves rather than work for other people. Mm-hmm. So it really fit what we wanted to do.
Any surprises from... You mentioned the people, the customers. Any surprises when they come in and they're asking for something that you totally didn't think about, or they like something that you thought was sort of the dark horse of the menu, anything like that?
Not as of yet, I wouldn't say. I've worked in hospitality for years, and again, from us both having worked in the film industry for a few years, I think nothing would surprise you anymore. What people might ask for, or suggestions they might have, or different ideas they might have. So, yeah, I think it would take a lot to surprise us at this stage.
Yeah, one lady surprised me. We have a banana cake that's it's very tasty, but it's sugar-free, it's gluten-free, so wheat-free,
dairy-free
as well.
Banana.
So I was doing the. It's the next step. So I did my pitch.
Uh-huh.
Usually goes down quite well nowadays. But she wanted to know what oil was used in it.
Wow.
And when I said vegetable oil, it wasn't good enough for her.
Well, what would she have wanted?
Coconut oil or
double extra virgin olive oil.
So nothing could have prepared me for that one.
And one person never. I think that's something that's, I think she's just lining up for constant disappointment. So and we're here. I mean, the noise you probably hear in the background every now and again is a rather spectacular. It's a coffee Negroni. You can talk us through the inspiration for this.
Definitely. So we call it the Bocchi Negroni. Mm-hmm. And the Bocchi Negroni means it's one of the signature drink on the menu. And that involves indeed a coffee element. So my inspiration for the drinks menu at Bocchi was a short list with signature drinks that are only available at Bocchi. And I wanted the entire drink needs to have a strong coffee element to it, because that's really what Bocchi is all about. Those two guys are so passionate about coffee. I wanted the cocktails to reflect that passion and to reflect the choice of coffee. So, you know, the blend, the old press that they use. So I looked at how I could use that into my cocktail list. So I've made a cold brew from it, I've made infusions from it, I've made bitters, I've made liqueur, and I've now ended up with three products that I'm using as a coffee element to the cocktails. Mm-hmm. And as far as the Negroni is concerned, I very simply infused a bottle or some Campari, which is an ingredient in Negroni, using coffee beans, all-pressed coffee beans. I won't reveal the proportions and the time.
We wouldn't ask you to.
That's what makes it special.
Not on tape anyway.
It's kept in the vault.
It's kept in the vault behind the bar. Basically, it's a very simple way of having a great twist on the Negroni, absolutely unique. You won't be able to drink that anywhere else in London. And we strongly believe it's one of the best Negroni this side of Milan, and you know, we're very proud of it. And I'm saying that because we only had fantastic feedback about it.
I don't think there's much argument from this side of the table.
And again, it's just as simple as an infusion of coffee into Campari, sweet vermouth, gin, and it's that easy. A little lovely orange wedge as a garnish, and that is indeed one of the signature drink at Bocchi, available throughout the day, as in from 12 onwards on the lunch menu. Hopefully that'll give you a little bit of an idea of what I've tried to do. The next signature drink is a espresso martini. You know, you can't really have a cocktail bar in the back of a coffee shop without having a banging espresso martini.
A bit of a moment at the moment, aren't they? I mean, it's a really popular cocktail right now.
Indeed. And you know, all the big brands of vodka are jumping on the wagon to be kind of associated with them. Obviously, for me, what was important is to create a coffee liqueur for Bocchi. That would be kind of the signature element of the bookies martini, as we call it. And so again, I've put together a coffee liqueur that is being used in the espresso martini, as well as the Bocchi Alexander, which is a twist on the brandy Alexander, made with a base of cognac. But as you can imagine, I'm no longer using chocolate liqueur, I'm using the Bocchi coffee liqueur.
Nice.
And already, I think you understand already a bit more what we've tried to do with the cocktail list.
No, absolutely.
And I think the last bit I'd like to mention is I've also made a coffee bitter. You know, bitters are used in drops and dashes in many cocktails. The most famous are aromatic bitters, Angostura bitters. But I've made a coffee bitter that I like to use in drops in the Bloody Bocchi, which is the Bloody Mary proper to Bocchi. So it's a lovely recipe, fairly classic. But I've used celery salt and cayenne pepper, for example, as spices. Bit of Cholula hot sauce, if you know it, and which is one of my personal favorite, and then that little bit of coffee bitter, which makes it extra special.
Thank you. So I guess I'm there, but where next? What's next? Is it more branches, more drinks, different? On the menu,
drinks.
It's fantastic. Your menu is fantastically kind of eclectic with inspirations from Boris. Spent a lot of your time in Hong Kong.
Or Southeast Asia in general. Okay. I lived in Japan and Singapore as well, but most of the time in Hong Kong. So there are some elements of. I don't know if anyone's been to Hong Kong, but food is generally fantastic in Hong Kong. Anywhere you go,
everywhere. Yes.
Like everywhere. Even if you go to an Italian restaurant, so the quality is just always really good. So food's always been a big part of my life. Us as a family, we would go out to restaurants maybe twice a week or something. So hopefully I managed to put some of that in.
And came you
combined
from
with
Hereford?
I grew up in the opposite side of the spectrum, the most rural spot you could find in Herefordshire, on top of a hill basically in the middle of nowhere. Which gave me a passion for the local produce, like English vegetables, fresh produce. Herefordshire beef is famous all over the world. It's the world's biggest cider making area.
Really?
Yeah. Mainly because they have the huge Bulmers factories there, so they make all like the most famous ciders. There's also a fabulous small sort of artisan community making cider the traditional ways, which we...
Do you feature cider?
We do, yeah. Okay. We stock a cider and a perry from Tom Oliver in Herefordshire.
Okay.
He was a very small artisan producer who... They're just phenomenally good, tasty, drinkable ciders.
Okay.
With the menu we try to sort of combine...
And the menu is, it's small plates...
In the evening,
Okay, can you come in for lunch?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we're open from 8 in the morning until 9:30 or 10 at the night. So in the daytime we do some pretty interesting sandwiches, we do some salad bowls, smashed avocado.
Tributes to the McMuffin as well.
McBocchi.
Yeah.
McBocchi,
The McBocchi is probably our signature dish. It comes on a charcoal brioche bun.
Okay.
It's got salt beef in it, avocado, fried egg, and a
sriracha mayonnaise and coriander.
Correct.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's good. We initially wanted to do a version of the McDonald's breakfast muffin, and then again through tasting and testing things, we actually came up with something that has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Except we love the name. We love the name McBocchi and just kept it. Sounds good. The menu is pretty eclectic. There's no real through line. It's not Japanese and English fusion or anything like that. It's just things that we think taste amazing.
Okay.
So in the daytime we have sort of solid breakfast, lunch, and then in the evening we want to put on small plates that encourage people to share food and try different dishes. And some pretty interesting desserts as well. So people can come and have, pre-theater, have some small plates, glass of wine, cocktail, post the editor, or just out for drinks, come and have a salted caramel chocolate brownie.
You have a very interesting brownie. I can attest to that.
Yeah,
it's delicious. Yeah.
A salted caramel chocolate brownie. Yeah. If you have it with vanilla ice cream, we get from the independent ice cream store next door. How delicious! And then if you pair that with a Loki Alexander, you're in food heaven.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Or any of the top chef spirits that we. I've chosen for Bucky. Looking for a shortlist again, you'll find that I wanted a kind of a go-to or a house spirit, as we call it, that you'd use in cocktail or in spirit mixes, and then you've got one option, two at the most, as an upgrade, and we've got some pretty good bottle on the black bar.
Fantastic. Excellent, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And clearly all underscored by coffee.
Yes.
Fueled by coffee.
Thank you, James.
Thank you very much. Guys.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Okay, so I hope you guys enjoyed our talk with the guys at Boki. Boki, Boki. B-O-K-I. I certainly did. I certainly enjoyed that coffee Negroni I had there. Fantastic. Awesome. Definitely.
Cracking drink.
Worth checking out. Now we're going to move down the street. We're still staying in the same general area. We're moving over to Frith Street in Soho for what you might not think of as a great place for coffee, but that's just because you're not paying attention. This is a hairdresser called Blades. But they do a fantastic espresso as well.
It is a truly remarkable coffee. As I say, for someone with my hairstyle, to have a favourite hairdresser's, there has to be a little more to it. That Strew is, I think by his own definition, is kind of an enthusiastic amateur, or self-taught coffee geek, which I think probably comes across quite well.
He's a fast learner too. I was really impressed.
Yeah.
Yes. And in addition to coffee, if you know how to ask nicely there, you can get a fantastic cocktail or maybe a nice shot of bourbon. There's a very nice downstairs members bar, and we're going to explore that and talk about a coffee with Shrew. And here we go.
I suppose we should actually introduce who we're talking to. This is Shrew, or at Blades in Soho. How would you describe... What would your job type be?
Primarily the husband of the hairdresser who got bored and started adding things to our humble establishment until it evolved into this current form that we call a hair club, and the activity therefore we call hair clubbing, which basically denotes the enjoyable way of doing hair. With your friends in a bar-like venue, and just, in a more civilized fashion, as I might have said before.
Excellent. Excellent. And obviously your coffee policy, so we're in the basement bar at the moment. So there's a fantastic coffee bar upstairs, which is perhaps, I've been describing it to various people as probably the best cup of coffee in Soho.
Well, thank you kindly.
So how did the coffee element come about? I think you said you were an enthusiastic amateur.
Yeah, well, to be honest, the coffee part was Julia's idea, so she always wanted to have a coffee shop in the hair place because, in her experience, people would be normally just waiting for their appointment and go out, get a cup of coffee, and then come back. So she obviously thought, why not just have them stay here and enjoy it? So we started out by building a bar and putting a nice, beautiful Faema 61 behind it, at which point I knew absolutely nothing about coffee.
But it's the dream machine, right?
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, once given the assignment, I obviously did my research, and then after being offered quite a few R2-D2 looking like contraptions with some bean deals that I didn't enjoy in the first place, so I just decided we're just gonna, you know, take it on the chin, purchase a good looking and important machine, historically speaking, and she's been there ever since. We call her Lavinia.
Lavinia.
Yeah, she's Italian, obviously. She's quite a temperamental. Quite a few.
We make no comments.
What is it that sets the 61, right?
Yes.
What sets the 61 apart from any of the other espresso machines?
Apparently the 61 is the one that started it all in terms of the revolution towards the semi-automatic espresso machines as we know them today.
Okay.
So it's a seminal
technological moment in history, I suppose. But that's pretty much all I know. All I know is that when I saw it, I liked it. It said, very important, this is the one that pretty much everything that came after is more or less built upon. And I've seen two versions. One had electronic buttons, which didn't really appeal to me.
Okay.
Because that apparently allows you to pull the perfect shot every single time. And I'm thinking, well, I want to control it. You know, I want to see what happens. So then I got the semi-automatic with little levers where you actually control just the timing. I'm afraid you can't control the pressure as in the old handles. But it gives you a little leeway to play with things. So we can do ristrettos by just reducing the extraction time and things like that. So it gives enough. It was funny when I was learning the basics of latte art, which I'm still not exactly
okay
at. I had a couple of guys come in who were real experts. And I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, there you go. This is the machine. And so they let the steam on rip and go, oh my God. And I'm like, what? She's lively, isn't she? I'm like, well, that's 61. I know, they used to do it in those days.
Slovenia. So,
apparently, this is not exactly what you look for in a latte art type setup in modern days. So it's okay, quite crude, according to them. But still, we kind of learned to deal with her. So it's just, I think it's just cranked up far too much. And that's about it. So we just had a... I enjoyed it, because the guys, you know, come in with this attitude. I'm just going to show you now. And the next thing you know, it goes in his face. I'm like, yeah, I told you. Feisty.
Well, that's part of the art, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, so you kind of learn, you know, to get around it. But yeah, so the machine came in, looked good. And then we started looking for beans. And I've just gone around and tried espressos everywhere.
Okay.
And, you know, just like by trial and error, the ones that I liked, I made a note of which brand they used. And just tried them until we settled on, at the time was Moccarabia, I believe, Italian brand. In the meantime, we went up a notch. Now we're doing the single origin. That's the phrase I actually don't enjoy that much because it sounds hipsterish to me.
Right.
But it's Ethiopian, 100% Arabica from the Sidimo region. And I'd love to pretend I know more about why Sidimo is different than any other Ethiopian region. I just know I've tried this one. It's really good. I liked it, and the only thing I do know is what I really like.
Exactly. Know what you like.
And we just, roll with that at this point in time, and it seems to be doing the job. So the espresso martinis are pretty good. That's what people tell us. I enjoy them. And yeah, we just go around our merry way. I'm trying to recommend espressos to most people, which they normally don't go for, which is something I'm a little bit sad about.
What do they want?
Usually just good old latte.
Okay.
Meaning, you know, kill it and put some milk and sugar in it so you don't know what it is.
They like coffee with their milk.
And sugar. Yeah. And, I mean, I get it, you know, it's creamy, it's yummy, but I like intense things. So probably the reason behind that would be why we do the double ristrettos, as I mentioned earlier. So any espresso, single espresso that you would order here, we'd actually cheat you into getting a double ristretto, which means the double basket of coffee, half the extraction time. So it's wasteful. You're basically getting the better part of the extraction with more flavor, less caffeine, and you just end up enjoying yourself much more than with a normal 30-second extracted single basket, which ends up with more harsh components in there as towards the end of the extraction, and you basically end up with more jitters because caffeine tends to come out in the sort of last 10 seconds mostly, which is something I've learned along the way. And I believe it's true. Because you can actually have like 3 or 4 double espressos and still kind of be pretty cool. If you over-extract one espresso for like over 30 seconds, you'll feel, depending on the beans, you'll start feeling the hit of the caffeine.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So it's, I think the best way to go around is a ristretto for me. And a double, just because roughly when using a semi-automatic machine, because you can't control the pressure, you end up with a similar volume. You get maybe a touch more than your Italian short single espresso if you time it about, say, 13, 15 seconds, depending on what you feel like. But definitely a civilized way to go. And my favorite question to ask of all baristas or people that seem to know coffee, I ask them, well, do you know what ristretto is? And they go, oh, yeah, sure. It's the really short, like, okay, yeah, fine. So what's a ristretto in terms of what's being restricted? That's the translation. And they go, well, it's the quantity, you know, because you extract them. I'm like, well, yes, but what is it? And not many people know, it's just time. Mm-hmm. It's extraction time. So ristretto means a lesser extraction time, that's all. And in the old days, when you had the actual hand pull machines, you could control the pressure by how hard you pull, and you could also control time. So you would have a normal single basket, you just do it really fast. So you'd end up with pretty much what it is in terms of volume, but you would extract shorter, and therefore extract less harsh components, more flavors, less caffeine. So with the semi-automatic, you just kind of fill up the old basket twice, I mean double, and just do it like 15 seconds, and does the trick.
So, you know your stuff, but you were starting at zero.
Well, knowing my stuff, I know
so it's a bit of a
limited
curve,
amount,
yeah.
I guess. But I like to do things my way. I'm a sort of self-taught, you know, guy who likes to appreciate the opportunity to discover things if you're doing it your own way and making your mistakes, or just following your peculiar taste for some, you know, level. So we do a few things differently, like the double ristretto being the king and the queen of. And sometimes we do things like, if people ask for Americanos, I'll never pour water over an espresso, I'll always put the espresso on top. I want the crema to stay there.
Okay.
So small things like that, they do make the difference. And we started, people started asking me about flat whites, which I never knew what they were. Went out, tried a few, understood it. Okay, so then there's the whole big, because it's Australian, New Zealand kind of vibe thing. And it's a lot of discussion about what it really is and how it should be done. And I just got fed up with it. And I figured, okay, well, it's called flat. So I'm just going to keep it flat. I'm just not going to froth and do any latte art. So what we do is we basically just heat up the milk and just dump a good old ristretto on top. And we just end up with just a tiny amount of micro froth so that you can actually float the crema on top. And it looks pretty strange. And people have been, you know, kind of giggling when I used to serve them. I said, look, we did it slightly differently here. And especially if they're Aussie, they go like, oh yeah, all right, yeah, what you got? And then they leave and they say, no, that was probably one of the better ones they ever had. And I'm like, thank you. It's sure not because I know how to do them, but that's an example of, you know, you do things your own way or kind of try and do things. And then there are silly things with that that you pick up that people make into these big things. Like, for instance, when you do this flat white, I'll froth the milk in the exactly wrong way, right? So you put the one all the way down, make that horrible sound, and you just do it until it's actually warm, but it does nothing for the actual froth other than putting that weird film I just mentioned. So it's like a super tiny amount of the most fine little froth. So when you pour that into the actual cup before you put the espresso on top, I discovered this little move where I started just tapping it just to kind of even it out. And what it does is it creates this sound, so the cup resonates, and then as you keep tapping along, you can hear this resonance going up by an octave or two, so it's like, it goes up, and people go like, ooh, what's that? And then I realize, oh, well, that's a special technique, you know, you shouldn't try this at home, you know, it's the viscosity and the density of the whatever, not so, and then people really buy it, I'm having fun with it, but it's just another example of here.
So flat white or B-sharp white.
Exactly. but, you know, I think it comes down to just the fact that if you're pretty square about what you enjoy and if you understand why, then you can kind of make your way through it. And I've never become a master of latte art or any such thing, but, you know, it's more like cooking. Just if you know what tastes good and what you would like to have, if you do it with your heart, usually you end up with a good response.
Very good. Excellent.
Demystifying, if you will.
Brilliant. Yeah,
that works.
That's lovely. Lovely.
There's obviously the booze side of things.
There is indeed.
I mentioned the Coretto. I'm trying to get people into Corettos, but people don't drink espresso as much around these parts.
So Coretto is...
So basically it's the Italian thing, corrected espresso.
Okay.
Basically when you get a shot of, it can be grappa, sambuca, you know,
okay.
So any kind of liqueur or spirit would be. And somewhere they'll actually mix it in their kit, somewhere they'll finish the espresso, and then you put it in.
Yeah, okay, I've had that, yeah, okay.
Which is, again, you get the crema, and it's beautiful. So I've tried, you know, introducing different things, like particularly the licorice thing, because it's quite good. I think it pairs well. It's one of those novelty things. I'll pour it a little bit so you can try it, actually, on its own. It's the Danish style, the Scandinavian style of licorice. And they're really nuts about salted licorice.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name for that, lacrid or something like that.
They're
insane about that stuff. This is just the vodka version of that.
There's actually a Danish barbecue team that do a load of stuff with pork.
I mean, look at that. Look at the
pork and licorice.
So I'm trying to encourage people to try and have like 25 ml of that with a really nice, you know, ristretto.
Yeah.
I'm not getting any takers amongst the sort of, you know, general population, if you will.
There's viscous and there's that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
See, I love that.
And you can try it. Actually, I also tried pairing it with the old Asian oil, which of course it works. But again, not many takers. I find that generally, you know, general public prefers things that are more bubblegumsy and sweet and vanilla-y, whatever you call it. So,
well, do you find there's sort of a convergence or a disconnect between, say, who comes in for a haircut, who comes in for a coffee, and who comes in for a drink? Or is it all the same sort of style?
I think there are actually no rules. It just...
Anarchy.
Yeah, I mean... we still struggle with the prejudice part, because we're a hair joint, and then people just keep assuming that the coffee or the drinks are probably second rate, which is what we're trying to fight now. And then whoever knows their stuff usually gets converted pretty fast, and then very happily so. But on a good number of occasions, it's like pulling teeth. You actually have to keep sort of incentivizing and, you know, kind of encouraging people. They go like, look, you should try this. It's really cool. And then, you know, we have a nice menu, and you go, well, these are craft beers, and this is biodynamic wine. Oh, by the way, you know what biodynamic is? Oh, we have 100% Arabica from Ethiopia. And then they start, you know, maybe like two or three times in, will they have their haircut, will they actually venture, you know, and risk it and a drink. And most cases, when they do, it's done. But we're fighting this prejudice thing, where this whole hair clubbing thing comes in, because it came as a... And the answer to the how do you describe, you know, what it is? If you go, oh, it's just a hair place with drinks, it's like, yeah, but, you know, you get that anywhere. People give you a glass of average wine at best, or, you know, filtered coffee or whatever. So it's kind of difficult to convey it, and then we found that hair clubbing does the trick, because it's got that little ring to clubbing, which puts a little exciting but cheeky note into it. And then at the moment you connect, you say hair clubbing, what's a bar, and so on, and then, you know, it kind of brings a smile to people's face, and it sounds positive and fun, but in that sort of safe, fun way, so it's obviously immediately... clear that we're not talking drugs and hookers here. So it's still like a safe.
I'm leaving.
Well, you should be surprised, because in our alcohol license we have a clear set of rules which prohibit us from any sort of sexual, you know, exploitation.
I was going to say, well, the Soho basement. Yeah, well, didn't have a reputation for.
They're still sensitive about these things. But yeah, the prejudice is pretty much there. So that's what we're trying to fight at this point, and it's working well, but, you know, as any process, it takes time. Same coffee, same thing, you know.
It's finished now.
It's just people have a very particular idea about things, and it's difficult to change.
Are you open early in the morning?
We used to be. Now we realize that it's kind of a waste, especially in line with the alcohol license. So now we're open from 12 to 9 on weekdays, 11 to late Saturdays, and 12 to 7 Sundays. But we used to open at 10. It's not that it didn't work. We just realized it's kind of detracting from the direction we're trying to head in now, which is this social sort of, you know, come in, get your hair done, look your best, have some really great drinks, which I should mention are obviously very well priced, because that's not what we make
our
mostly. And then, you know, you end up with a, you know, start your evening off with a really good kick, and you look your best, and off you go, you know, paint the town red. So we're trying to sort of focus on that kind of side of things. Where coffee still plays a part, because, yeah, espresso martinis are very popular in our establishment.
espresso. It's one of those, great drinks that I've never found the right time to drink them. They kind of really mess me up after a certain time in the afternoon. And then, but yeah, if you have one at 8 o'clock, people look at you strange.
Well, depends on your plans for the rest of the evening.
If you have a breakfast espresso martini, just people just look at you odd.
And it was invented so as well.
Yeah, it's like down the street.
It's only fair to represent it.
Excellent. Well, there you go. That was Stru doing his geeky, fantastically geeky, brilliantly entertaining thing.
Worth checking out.
Yeah, some very, very good drinks and as I say, a quite spectacular cup of coffee. So, well, that's it for the first episode of All Consumed. Congratulations, and thank you if you're still here. So thanks, Mum. Hopefully this is going to become a regular thing, depending on, involving our travel schedules as well, I would say.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it, yes. We both are traveling and consuming a lot.
All of it.
Speaking of consuming, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
I've been able to stop for coffee. I'm fine. I'm hydrated and alert, but I'm hungry. So maybe next we could talk about something to eat. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a very good idea. I think
what do we like to eat, Neil?
Well, it's. I think anyone who looks at us will not be thinking vegetarian. So meat. I think is very good. Good subject for episode 2.
Good meaty subject. Okay.
Meaty.
Yes. Publishing date to be determined, but we're going to be coming out with a meat episode for our second foray. Then hopefully after that we'll be covering range of topics. Michelin star restaurants, perhaps.
Absolutely. Rum. I think, and
cocktails you can make with rum.
Fun you can have with rum. Actually, rum. Yeah. It's all rum. It's all rum from
here.
We're
just going to drink rum. Yeah. And subject you to listening.
So and cheese probably. And probably cheese you can make with rum.
Yeah. Wow.
So. Right. But I think that's all from certainly all from me.
Okay. And if people want to follow us, do all that social stuff, you can follow us on Twitter at All Consumed Pod, P-O-D, Pod, All Consumed Pod. And if you're interested in following me, I am at Tiki Chris, T-I-K-I Chris on Twitter. And my blog is tikichris.com. And
for me, you can track me down on Twitter and Instagram as at Dinehard. Like the film with an extra N. If you want to get in touch, those are probably the best.
Yeah, we're very easy to find. Chris Osborne, Neil Davey, and we are caffeinated and out of here. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Chris.